The Church of God the Eternal presents What is the Natural Body? This is the number 18 tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
God is creator. It's an awesome statement in its own right. There is nothing on the face of this earth that God has not either brought into existence or allowed to prevail. You know, the most difficult thing for most people, I guess, of the common, ordinary grasp of Christianity, or churchianity, whichever you wish to call it, the most difficult problem they have is explaining the existence of human nature. How in the world could a benevolent God create human beings? Got quite a time with that one, haven't you? Except for those who are wise and who understand the truth of God by revelation, God said, I create good and I create evil. That's right. Part of his word. So he is the creator of all that exists, including human nature. And then turned around and told us that human nature is about as filthy and vile as anything can possibly be. But did he intend for us to pursue that way? Or did he give it to us for reason? We have said so many times that any dead fish can float downstream, but it takes a healthy and a virile one to go upstream, to go against the current. So it becomes obvious that character then is the will to go contrary to the natural inclinations. So God then, by virtue of his responsibility as creator, constructed then the body according to a design or a purpose which he had in mind. The design of that body, of course, is carnality, weakness, the flesh, or called, as we have already seen, the body of sin. And within that body are specific members. I've covered these subjects for you in times past. I selected, as I said, eight of them, of the various members of our bodies, our eyes, our ears, our tongues, our hearts, our hands, our feet, as well as our minds. So God then, as creator, created this body of sin, and he created it subject to itself. We are inextricably tangled up in the implications, the morass of our own difficulties, until we are released by some external force or power. So the body was created subject to itself. But in process of time, by a call, he gave us opportunity to use those members. The same members. He didn't take our eyes out. He didn't cut our feet off. The only thing he said was, get rid of the natural mind and let this one be in you. That's the only amputation or severance that occurred. He cut off the mind. He said that it was essential for us to get rid of that mind and to allow a different one to come in. But I still have the same hands, I still have the same feet, I still have the same eyes. So the eyes that at one time were used for erroneous purposes, the feet that took me into areas and to perform or do certain things contrary to the will of God, are now required to be used for a different purpose, with a different mind, a different orientation. This time, with a new mind, the body must become the body, members totally, of a body of righteousness. But how? What are the member responsibilities? We have already seen the purpose of the ears. We went through that last week. To understand that God does not intend for us to have ears to hear evil, to listen to critical comments, to hear things that are not approved of God, that isn't the reason for which He gave us ears. He gave us ears to hear His word, to hear the beautiful things ordained of God. But then He also gave us eyes. Eyes that are, as certain poets have said, the windows of the soul, that is, of the body. Let's see then what God intended for us to accomplish with these eyes. As a part of the body of righteousness, how will your eyes be used? Will it have the approbation, the approval of God? Or are our eyes still devoted to things that are not ordained of God, frowned upon, or rejected totally? Are we using a part of the instrument of God for purposes that are not pleasing or acceptable to God? What are the things that we see? What do we admit into the consciousness of our very bodies through the members of our eyes? First point is the eyes then are to see, which has a broader spiritual meaning of understanding the truth. Eyes were given to us then as a means by which to comprehend the truth of God. Here in Deuteronomy 29, and let's note verse 4. Indeed, a very difficult text for many people to explain. Yet, says the Spirit of God, in the uttering of the words of God, yet the Lord hath not given you an heart to perceive, and eyes to see. As we also last week understood, and ears to hear unto this day. As I said to you last week, did that mean, with regard to the ears, that they were all deaf mutes from the time of Abraham down to this time, just before they were taken over into the promised land, accomplished by Joshua? Not one of them could hear? Or was it a matter of what they were hearing? Whatever it was, they didn't see, they didn't comprehend, they didn't perceive, and they didn't hear until that very day. Are our eyes then the opened ones? Or are we still involved in this darkness? He didn't tell us at this point when He was going to open those eyes. He only said that up to that point He had not given them hearts to perceive, eyes to see, nor ears to hear unto that day. When did He allow them to see? Or did He? Exodus 13 and verse 9. Exodus 13 and let's note verse 9. And it shall be for a sign unto thee upon thine hand, and for a memorial between thine eyes, that the Lord's law may be in thy mouth. For with a strong hand hath the Lord brought thee out of Egypt. Something here now was to be a sign. And it was to be a sign upon the hand, which always represents activity, performance, work, and for a memorial between thine eyes, at the same time would enlighten. The eyes were going to comprehend, or they would see. Whatever it was then, God gave it to them as a means by which they were to comprehend, to understand. And that by that means, the law of God would be in their mouths. For with a strong hand, he had brought them out of Egypt for a purpose. In Matthew 13 and verse 16, Matthew 13 and verse 16, I want you to keep your questions right there on the surface. We're going to answer them before we get finished. Matthew 13, and let's note verse 16. But he said here now, well, let's go back to verse 15 so we get the setting. A prophecy of Isaiah. For this people's heart is waxed gross, that is dense, obdurate, hard, and their ears are dull of hearing. Now it is interesting that after one is called and he has been given the ability to begin to grasp or to hear the truth of God, that you can no longer speak of deafness. It now becomes a matter of dullness. We begin to lose the capacity that was given to us. Their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. So they did have something that was given to them. Their ears began to be stopped up. They were having trouble with it. And their eyes they had closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes. Some kind of a deliberate situation occurred, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. But now notice, let's not worry about the past, because that's not the context of my subject today at all. But I want you to notice a difference now. Here now is the purpose. But blessed are your eyes. Now, for any human being at that given day, could have been one involved in ophthalmology or an oculist or whomever, wouldn't have made any difference what his technical skills may have been. He could have looked at those two sets of eyes and they would have looked exactly the same. He said, I don't see any difference. And yet one was able to see and the other one couldn't. Interesting, isn't it? But blessed are your eyes, he said to certain individuals, for they see. Must have meant the others didn't then. And your ears, for they hear. So some are going to see, and others are not going to see. And then somewhere in between the two are those whose eyes are being closed because they themselves will it that way. It is a progressive, deteriorating disease that takes their visibility away from them. All right, the eyes then were given to see, which means to comprehend the truth of God. To see, to comprehend God and his way of life. In Job 42 and verse 5, here is one of the very significant patriarchs of the past, one who was highly venerated and esteemed both spiritually and physically. He must have been a king, he was extremely dominant, one of great power, auspicious in his capabilities. But notice what it said here. Along toward the latter part of his life, did he just then begin to see? For he said here in verse 5, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. I wonder how many people are like that in the world. They've heard of, you know, they heard the name of God. Sure, phonetically, it all sounds the same. You know, I can listen to an endless array of these so-called electronic programs, and they mention the name of God. And it sounds exactly like anybody who may be using the name wisely and acceptably, who is really referring to one and only true God. The others are blind, and the one sees. So you can't then determine this on the basis of the phonetic pronunciation of the word. That's not what it's talking about at all. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. Many people have. But they have never known God. Never known God. If you want an explanation for that, just turn to Matthew 11, verses 25 through 27. It will make it very clear for you. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye sees you. That's after all the turmoil, the difficulties, the trials, the unique problems of Job's life. He could say that all of his training, and if you will recall, even God himself said when speaking with Satan, said, have you ever considered my servant Job? He called him his servant. And he said, is there any like Job? Must have been a pretty fine individual. And yet, at this particular point in time, Job himself admitted that what he had heard and seen before was nothing. For the first time, he really knew, comprehended God. I wonder how many of us may have to experience some of those same trials before we will truly see God. I don't mean just the hearing. I don't mean a conception of the mind. I mean knowing. Oh, my dear brethren, I hear plenty that makes me know that there are far too many that do not really comprehend. I mean like Job. And by that, I'm not saying that you're not called. I'm only saying, have you really seen God? The question might be asked, has any one of us? Only in retrospect can we answer that. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? When we're driven to our knees and we cry out to God and we become cognizant of a God that we only thought we knew before. Job, so said God, stood in tremendous relationship with God. And yet, after all of his trials and experiences, could say, I'd only heard of him, but now mine eyes see. With trials, with problems, with difficulties that we encounter on a day-by-day basis, sometimes our vision gets better. It's amazing how trials can improve vision spiritually. In Luke 10, Luke the 10th chapter, and let's notice verses 23 and 24. And he turned him unto his disciples and said privately, Blessed are the eyes which see the things that you see. There are multiple billions of people upon this earth today who are, in the real definition of the word, blind. But the Bible says that there's a handful that see. They comprehend. However, the Bible also tells us that in many respects, our vision is highly impaired, for we see through a glass darkly. Blessed are the eyes which see the things that you see. For I tell you that many prophets and kings have desired to see those things which you see. There were kings of old, and there were prophets of God who were not permitted to see nor to understand, and have not seen them. And to hear those things which you hear, and have not heard them. It's not strange at all when you realize what the Apostle Peter was inspired to write regarding the prophets and their discourses of the past, when he said they wrote those things, but they weren't written for them of that day, they were written for us in our day. How many people really grasp that what Isaiah wrote, or what Ezekiel wrote, or what Hosea, or Joel, or Amos, or Obadiah, or Nahum, or Micah, or whomever wrote, was not written for that time, but was written for now? Not many. But the Holy Spirit inspired the Apostle Peter to write that they were not written for then, but for us now. And so the Apostle Paul also wrote when writing to the Roman church, if you will recall, in Romans 16, verses 25 and 26, that they were not comprehended, but they were hidden from that day unto the very time of Christ and the apostles. They wrote them, but they didn't understand them. Some of them even asked, as Daniel. And God said, Go your way, Daniel, for these things are written for the time of the end. They'll be revealed in their appropriate time. Blessed are the eyes which see the things that you see. For I tell you that many prophets and kings have desired to see those things which you see, and have not seen them. Then somebody in the last days, a certain number, but even as we're told in what is commonly called the Sermon on the Mount, it's only a handful, for narrow is the way that leads to life eternal, and few there be that find it. Only a handful of people, someplace, understood. In Acts 26 and verse 18, Acts 26, noticing verse 18, let's go back now to about verse 16. But rise and stand upon thy feet, for I have appeared unto thee for this purpose, to make thee a minister and a witness both of these things which thou hast seen, and of those things in the which I will appear unto thee. further things that were going to be made visible, comprehensible to the Apostle Paul. Delivering thee from the people and from the Gentiles, unto whom now I send you, to open their eyes. That's quite a performance. To open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light. Oblivion, ignorance, a lack of comprehension, now to an understanding. And from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and inheritance among them which are sanctified by faith that is in me. Then two purposes so far. The truth of God was to be made available. And then men were to comprehend God and his way. That's the purpose for these eyes. That's why God gave the eyes of the body to mankind. Not for the fulfillment of the things which I mentioned to you earlier when I went through the members of the body of sin. And I explained how we viciously, wrongly use these very members. But now thirdly, eyes were given to men to see the beauty of God's law. How many of us, on a day-by-day, an hour-by-hour basis, really look at, behold, study the incomprehensible nature of the law of God? Do we see its beauty? The majesty of that law? Remember, you were not created subject to that law. You were created in opposition to God. You were created blind to these things of value. Now, with our eyes open, can we see the inherent beauty of the law of God? Notice Proverbs 7 and verse 2. Proverbs 7 and verse 2. Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. You know, it's not uncommon for young children, or for adults too, to lust after a beautiful apple. I'll tell you, when you see it on the shelf or hanging on the tree, I'll tell you, the taste buds get to flowing. Or if you could just get a hold of that. Is that the way we react to the law of God? Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. So when our eyes are opened up, if truly they are, by God in his appointed time, we are allowed to see the beauty of that law. It is at least as significant to us as a beautiful apple is to us physically. But then also, our eyes are opened so that we begin to grasp right from wrong. We begin to see things. And we're going to do slightly different, yea, vastly different, than our mother, Eve. What happened to her? Genesis, the third chapter. Here has been the frailty of mankind down to today, including every one of us. If we are not careful, if our eyes, the eyes of our soul, the eyes of our spiritual call are not wide open, we're going to be prey to the subtlety of this advertisement just as much as our famous mother, Eve. In Genesis now, the third chapter, Genesis 3, and let's begin in verse 5. For God doth know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened. And they've been sold this bill of goods clear down to the present. As a matter of fact, it is the exact same premise that is being espoused by one-worlders, by the elitists, by the modern-day Babylonians. And it has caught nearly every mortal to this very day in one way or another. It is a major battle that we are fighting. And it is a battle that without the help of God, and truly having the eyes wide open to the knowledge of Almighty God and not to the concepts of Satan the devil, unless our eyes are wide open, we're going to subscribe to it. Why? Because it comes naturally. Did not the Apostle Paul write of the pleasures of sin? Does he mean that it is a pleasurable thing for us to go out and to commit criminal acts? It's not what he's talking about. All people do not have the same weaknesses. It's very easy for the one who does not have the particular problem, let's say, with smoking, to condemn the one who is absolutely chained to it. God wants us to see ourselves for what we are. We're all addicted to something. We all have some form of physical weakness. Everyone has residing within him the strong, powerful influence of that natural flesh with which you were born. God helping you if you are the epitome of sin in every one of the departments. You need some help. But mortals are quick to indict and condemn those who commit problems that are not a problem to them. But they never see their own problems. They never see their own. So somebody could in turn condemn them. Well, but that isn't anywhere near as problematic or troublesome as what you're doing. Then what we do is start a form of justification and comparative analysis. And God said, when you compare, you are unwise. I find no comparisons in all the Bible, with one very generous exception. It is Christ himself who said the first four commands are the first command, and the last six are called the second. Therefore, he is saying that the violation of God's Sabbath or having another God before us is a whole lot worse than getting involved in extramarital relationships, but not to human beings. Why, that's the worst thing you could ever commit. You see, we don't see things as God sees them. Now, does that mean any one of them is acceptable? No. I'm only saying if you're going to compare, Christ gave you the only right of comparison. He called the first four the first, and the second six the second. And that's the only comparison you find in the Bible. Beyond that, God did not leave us the right of comparison. Now, what did he say? Let's notice it once again. For God doth know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. But there was one major problem. No character. All of a sudden, we could see and comprehend things, but we had no ability to handle it. That necessity of character is the essence of Christianity. That's what it's all about. That's why you have to be called, and you are now in the process of developing the character to handle that kind of knowledge. Men of their own ability cannot do it. For immediately they are going to look at those things that most directly influence them. Do you think for 1 minute that you're going to put spiritual things first as a human being? Why, of course not. The argument you will hear incessantly is that if your job requires you to work on the Sabbath or the holy days, why, anybody but a fool would go out and work. You got to take care of your family, don't you? And how many of us are tried with the same principle? Deep down in our own minds, if we could just find some form of rationalization when the test is brought to surface. You know, God reads hearts and minds. He knows what's going on down there. How many of us have been tried by those very circumstances? You're looking at poverty. You're looking at a certain set of difficulties. And if you could just change some basic concept of God, just a little, you could get by. Well, that's only one of the avenues. How many of us do it? You see, we may see, but we are always going to put the physical first. What is Babylonianism? But serving the physical. You see, you make a giant mistake when you assume that all of these nefarious creatures out here that are creating this New World Order, this Babylonian system, are doing it with evil intent and purpose. They, in their own minds, think that they're going to give you the best of all possible worlds. That's what they think. Why, you never give up what you have in hand for something that is nebulous or ethereal. You take the tangible, you take what's right here. That is the entire essence of every article I have ever read in the occult or witchcraft. That's what it's all about. We want a power now that caters to these physical demands, that takes care of the expectations of our physical drives. That's exactly what happened here. He was saying to Eve, you've never seen him. Why, open up your eyes and see the physical things that are available. Don't delude yourself. Take what's available. That's the thing that counts. Christ countered that in Matthew, the 6th chapter, if you'll recall, beginning in verse 24, reading through verse 32 or 33. For God does know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. Another form of vision. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, That is, it catered to the natural inclinations. Remember, that's why I've been talking about the natural inclinations. They're going to destroy you. But they are certainly pleasurable to the natural man. Those are the things that we enjoy. They rob us of faith. They rob us of purpose. They rob us of self-discipline. They rob us of every characteristic that is pleasing, right, and acceptable in the sight of God. Because they cater to the mundane, to the physical, to the natural. Pleasurable? Oh, indeed they are. The minute we do not have to exercise faith, we feel so confident. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. They both swallowed it. And the eyes of them both were opened. But what did they see? This was the eyes of understanding the system of this world. Who is the God of this world? Educationally? Socially? Politically? Economically? Morally? In health? In every other facet of man's endeavor. The eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. Now all of a sudden a strange revelation occurred. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. In other words, they undertook to devise their own protection. Is it strange that God uses clothing as the representation of the knowledge of the kingdom of God? Here was clothing created by man for man, as opposed to what God ultimately gave. What they created catered to the whimsical nature of man. What God gave was practical and serviceable. What a difference. The whole story is wrapped up. That is, the entire essence of the Bible is wrapped up in the third chapter of Genesis. It's one of the most significant chapters in all the Bible. The entire gospel in just a few verses is given. Sometime we'll have to cover it. So sometimes we want our eyes open to the wrong things. And when we have our eyes opened, we're not sufficiently wise, disciplined, to select that which is good. Why, immediately she saw that it was good when God said it was evil. What a difference. So if we swallow the things that are being proffered today, we can think they are excellent, despite the fact that God calls them evil to the nth degree. The fifth point. We need our eyes open to see, to understand, and to establish orientation and direction, so that as we are confronted with the choices of life, and that's why I put this in the order that I did, because Satan is out there, let's not forget that. He is going to broadcast to you at every turn of the road. And how does he do it? Well, he probably isn't going to come in and sit on your windowsill. He does that for some people, however. But generally, he gets into these minds. And he knows the nature of those minds, and he can play on them. And he is going to induce you to accept those things that are palatable to you, that you want, the way you want it. So we need our eyes open, really, to give ourselves acceptable orientation and direction. All the ways of a man are right in his own sight, or his own eyes. You see with eyes, don't you? All the ways of a man are right in his own eyes. You can't trust that. You say, well, this is the way I see it. That's unfortunate. How can you trust that if that's the way you see it? Remember what we read back in Acts 26:18? God said that he sent certain ones to call them and to turn them from darkness to light. It is a miraculous circumstance. And God is going to make that revelation exactly one time. And we're going to keep our eyes alert with brilliant vision only by dedication and purpose, or we are going to allow, by the dictates of our own carnal natures, the growth of glaucoma, spots, or visual loss, failure of acuity. I have said, brethren, and I will repeatedly emphasize, there is no way I am going to turn from that full way which was given to us. No way of it. I didn't come into it believing it any more than anyone else. I was called into it. I now believe it. And I will keep that orientation. God helping me to my dying days. Psalms 25. Psalms 25 and verse 15. Mine eyes are ever toward the Lord, for he shall pluck my feet out of the net. Too many times our eyes are fixed upon one another, circumstances, conditions, or some other physical, tangible frailty. Why can't we just fix them upon God and keep them there? Mine eyes are ever toward the Lord. By keeping them there, he's going to pluck us right up out of our difficulties. Which in all probability means that all the turmoil and the strife is going to still exist out of here, but he's going to give us the right orientation. You don't move the circumstances. God created those circumstances. He put them here. He isn't going to take them away. He's only going to change the orientation of that mind where you can accept. You can exist within. Yes, we may be plagued and troubled by the conditions of this world, but God hasn't elected to change those things yet. We've just got to change our orientation of our minds. Psalms 19 and verse 8. Psalms 19, and noting verse 8. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. When God calls us to see that law, then our study of it, our application of it, is truly enlightening and reassuring. The sixth point is, our eyes were given to us as a means of seeing the needs of others. In Proverbs 22 and verse 9, Proverbs 22, and let's note verse 9. He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. And there are some people will read this, and first thing you know, they think in terms of, well, we should be sending care packages to this place, that place, and someplace else. They never see all the Bible put together. Never do. What about those circumstances where God says that if they do so and so, that he's going to rob them of all their potential and they're going to be forced into poverty and so on? Does he intend then for us to go around and counter him? You see, there are many where God is going to take their very sustenance right out from under them. Now, if I don't understand that, and I believe just in the broad generality of this text, then God is going to curse somebody and I'm going to turn around and bless them. What nonsense. Then it means within the structure of what God has allowed some people, and once again, that's not the purpose of this dissertation or this sermon at this time. There is, and God has allowed for reason, some to have great abundance and others to exist in want. He's testing both. He wants to see if some of them can handle it, and he wants to see if others can accept their lot. And then he allows also a set of circumstances to see if in those circumstances we'll reach out and help. When those circumstances are not for cause, but truly circumstance, then we have to weigh. We have to use the intelligence that God gives to us. But eyes were given to us to evaluate, to test, and to serve, to help, to assist. And then the final point for the eyes is to see the need and thereby establish singularity of purpose. Matthew 6. Remember I gave it to you earlier? Matthew, the sixth chapter, verses 22 and 23. We have three texts here for the closing text that I want to give to you. Matthew 6, beginning in verse 22. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, then one of the real problems is duplicity. We don't have a singular objective, and duplicity is in itself very revealing because you can't trust the individual. You don't know whether they're going or coming. You can't trust them. Remember, James explained it over in the book of James a couple of times. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, he doesn't mean one eye. He's talking about objective. Your whole body shall be full of light. That is, it has orientation. It has purpose. But if thine eye be evil, your whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? Ephesians 1 and verse 18. I must hasten here. Ephesians 1 and noting verse 18. The eyes of our understanding being enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of this calling and what the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints, and what is the exceeding greatness of his power to usward. So then the eyes of understanding are what God is opening. In John 4 and verse 35, John 4, noticing verse 35, say not you, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. Great need, if you can really see it. The world is not Christianized, it's churched. But there's a vast difference. Now, what's the need? Revelation 3 and verse 18. Revelation 3 and verse 18 for our final text. Here now is what God addresses to some of the people that actually were called. I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, meaning the word of God that's already been tried and proven, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that you truly may see. Yes, sometimes, though called, eye salve is still vitally essential. Next time, we're going to talk about the feet of righteousness. Just as interesting.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented What is the Natural Body? This was the number 18 tape in this series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.